What's up, everybody, and welcome to the Rideshare Rodeo Gig News and Interviews. I'm your host, Steve. Let's get it on. We definitely got some topics for today, you guys. We got the Lyft potentially stopping operations in Minneapolis as of April 1st. We have the Lyft driver accused of picking up two teens, sexually assaulting one. And we got the a handful of articles about how DoorDash and Lyft should team up for a common goal of defeating Uber. And you know, that's really not a lot to get into on that one. You guys can look that up, or I'll put it in the show notes, a link to at least one of those stories. I looked through a few, they all kind of say the same thing. It's not Lyft buying DoorDash or DoorDash buying Lyft, or even that's what they're saying should happen. They're saying that they should make an alliance or a agreement. In fact, they used a word. We'll hit this one and kind of get off it so that I'll put the link in. But what was the word they used that really threw me off? Okay. However, the potential opportunities he sees are more like a loyalty partnership rather than DoorDash buying Lyft, for example. Okay. So that's like the last tag on the article. I got to say, what really grabbed me in this, or it would have just been another like read over for me, but the word loyalty, okay? Loyalty. First of all, I didn't know that I thought that if you went to the gig book, the gig worker, gig worker definitions of words, I thought loyalty was removed. I didn't think that existed in the gig workers' partnerships with the companies. Loyalty isn't a thing. And definitely company to company, B2B, loyalty can't be a thing. Even if they form a partnership, these companies are as unloyal as they can be. I mean, this is actually the absolute, like, that word is, it should never be brought up in the gig economy because it doesn't apply to anybody in the gig economy. I do see that this was not the case when I pulled this up earlier. I do see that at this time, Lyft is up 0.35%, and Dash is down again. Dash has just been kind of falling. I've read articles that said they did okay yesterday. But Dash is at DoorDash is at negative 1.86%, and they were down before too. And that seems to be going up. So I don't know how Lyft got up a little. But yeah, that's really all I wanted to hit on with that article. So I can at least get that out of the way. Let's see what else we got here today that hopefully we'll get to. We know that the Instacart lawsuit, I want to address that. Some of these will just be quick. And then we'll see what else we get to. Before we go too far, I do want to bring in... I want to play for you a piece I did this weekend on some other social platforms, and then I'll come back on the other side. But it has a lot of relevance, and again, we're going to hit on DoorDash with this one, and then when we come out of this, we're going to talk about the Minneapolis story of April 1st and what we're looking at over there. Earned by time, tiers, not seeing orders if you're not on the right tier, this, that, the other, everything, single thing that takes away control. And yet we're independent contractors? Bullshit. Bullshit. But on the DoorDash, 100%. You are treated like an employee. You are paid like an independent contractor. Straight up. And people are aware of this. Legislation is coming. Caps are coming. And yet all I do is see DoorDash add more trash, more trash, more junk, just trash. I'm over it. But I'm coming
legally. I got legal rideshare behind me. I got Mike Harubi. I got all the freelancers group in California. I got Kim Cavan. I got Pacific Legal Foundation. I've got people who are fighting for other independent contractors, not just gig app workers. And they're coming for you because I told them, let's go for you. I'm sick of this crap. DoorDash, you treat people wrong. You do. I know people make videos all the time. This is my rant. You treat people wrong. You know it. You have an awful, awful, awful moral compass. You don't even have a moral compass.
It's a little late. Drops on Saturday. Just trying to get through the winter season here, guys. Sorry for it being late this week. I did say it would drop yesterday, but let's get into it anyway. Clearly today we are talking about DoorDash. I'm sure many of you will relate to what we're going to talk about to other apps as well, but I need to specifically get some things out about DoorDash because they take it steps farther than the other apps when it comes to all of the things that we need: transparency, you know, honest partnerships, independent. If we're independent contractors, treat us as such. If we're W-2s, then go ahead and let the legislation say so, because that's where everything's headed. And it's a big mess, you guys. It's a big, big mess. So for years, there has been a big group of people fighting for to remain independent contractors pre-2020. So in California, when AB 5 was enacted, nobody expected that to what the effect would be. It was devastating. It put family businesses and careers out of business, and careers ended. Yes, I'm not exaggerating. And there were no jobs created. These are the people who did not want jobs, though, anyway. So why? You didn't create any jobs and you killed off independent contractors. Why? I mean, if they were able to work and earn, independent contractorship in the traditional sense, you guys, is earned. You go out there and you pay your dues working a W-2, working this and that, the other, maybe a bunch of freelance jobs. You get very good at something. And that's when you decide, I think I can run my own business. Well, the gig apps are a little bit different. And unfortunately, it's been undefined since day one. We are 15 years into Uber. Uber was started 15 years ago. So 1.5 decades ago, Uber was created, and it still has no definition of employment. We have tests everywhere. We have Barella, we have ABC, we have the IRS standards, we have the new metric where it's you know, all these different ways that they're trying to, you know, the six factor test in the DOL rule change, like all of these. DoorDash doesn't pass any one of them. So it's not even like they can say, hey, if you just put the Barella back in place, we'll be good. No, you won't. You don't pass any test. I don't agree with some of the tests. The ABC test is a killer, and that would kill off even the truest of independent contractors. But how can you say that we are independent contractors when you've taken away all the rights that we are due to have as independent contractors? You know, clearly 15 years, that's a long time, you guys. That's a long time to have an undefined space. If a business starts tomorrow down the road from my house, it is clear from day one, if you are an employee or if you are an independent contractor, if you're working with that business, you just go into, and you check and you see if you are. That's how easy it is. That should be how easy it is here. They never called this the hybrid independent contractor or something, as they should have. And in fact, a lot of places just turned cheek to it because so many venture capitalists were involved in the beginning of these companies that they had enough pull in politics to make sure that it was just kind of, hey, we're not public yet. Don't really make a big deal out of this. And they were burying things. And they were, you know, let's be honest, money gets funneled to people to do favors for companies. If you are a supporter, or if they support your campaign. So I'm not going to get into dirty politics. I'm just saying, realize, especially before these companies were public, they had politicians in their pockets. They still do. But when they were not IPO'd and public companies that were being traded, they had a lot less accountability. And that happened for, I mean, when did Uber go public? A decade after it started? So the fact that for the first decade plus of these apps, there was no federal or state definitions about anything. All we have ever known is that we are not W-2 employees. Well, really? We'll get to that. The problem this has created is that they are not traditional independent contractor models. Now we are faced with the looming threat of to the level of independence we could have on these platforms. The DOL, the Department of Labor rule change on March 11th will have effect. On March 12th, will people be able to say nothing happened? Look, we're on the 12th and nothing happened. No. Will people? Yeah. Content creators, news publications that run on the side of the companies, people will make incorrect information because nobody knows what will happen, but everybody knows it's going to take a while to roll it out and to see the effects. So like to make a video the next day or to publish a story on the 12th saying, hey, this is the 12th, nothing happened on the 11th. That's very bad, very bad reporting. Maybe you will even see that, but from everybody I've talked to, they're going to do what they did in California and go after certain groups first, just like the carve-outs. So for years, we have watched the pay model for gig app workers drop on all platforms. We've never seen a rise, never once on any platform. Challenge any of you to bring me that the evidence otherwise. Every one of us knows, especially us veterans, we know. You start here, and especially if they're launching, you start here, and it's the honeymoon period. That's what we call it. They call it the oversaturation period. Yeah, let's get a bunch of drivers on this platform. Do we have enough? Yep. Okay, now get three times more of that many. That's what they do during the honeymoon period when they seem to be paying us so well. And we have seen these companies steal from drivers. Make legal agreements they never live up to, and in many cases, especially recently, punish their customers for any state influence or regulations that affect their operations in that market. I mean, this is crazy to me. They've always taken it out on us, the drivers, but you're taking it out on your customers? I've been in business my whole life. I've owned businesses, I've ran businesses, I'm a jack of all trades. I've done so many different things. It's crazy to me because the one thing you never do is hurt your customers. Customer service is priority one. We know that as drivers and gig app platform workers, we don't get good customer service. That's one thing. Okay. I mean, I'm not happy about it, but the fact that they literally are going, you know what? Let's make money out of these legislations. Let's just take it out of the customers. I mean, like, that's crazy to me. And I think they're seeing the negative effect up in Seattle right now, not just the drivers, the platforms as well. Years ago, we can remember DoorDash allowed anyone to dash now simply by opening the app and clicking a button. During those years, they hid all the necessary details and transparent pay for drivers to make informed decisions. They have been caught multiple times stealing from drivers and simply had to pay fines and occasionally pay back settlement amounts to drivers. They have made deals with states where they already had loopholes in place to sidestep the agreements they made when they went in to make the agreements. So therefore, not going in with any kind of ethical or honest behavior. They have oversaturated markets to amounts of drivers we have never seen on any other platform. DoorDash, especially in this country, the United States, is one of the worst at this. Over the past couple of years, they have actually made things worse, creating a top dasher where acceptance rates determine your status, creating tiers for people to get better orders, again, based on acceptance rating, made it so you can't dash now unless you reach these pretend levels, which are only found in W-2 settings. And even now with the legislation coming, DoorDash is doubling or even tripling down on these illegal factors for choosing who sees what offers. Independent contractors all have the same right as one another. Without there being control factors, the hiring entity uses to determine offers Dashers see. DoorDash wants to treat you like an employee and pay you like an independent contractor. This breaks any and every determining method of whether or not you are one. So this year will especially be interesting to see what DoorDash does and what they will, how they will handle these holes they have dug for themselves, because they have. Last Friday, a friend sent out a screenshot to me of a negative 50 cents peak pay. Now, do we know that that is coming out of the money? No, but we looked, and in many markets, it was a negative 50 cents peak pay or a negative $1 peak pay. Do you understand what that could mean? I mean, peak pay alone, that word should mean you're making more. We all should assume that. But do you understand that if they started charging we're going to take 50 cents off for every order you want? I mean, we don't have any proof that they did it yet, but I'm sure we'll see something come of this over this week. So with that said, you know, we've seen Seattle's legislation pay up fail. We've seen New York's legislation failing. And in summary, no one wanted legislation in the gig apps, not the companies, not the drivers. This year, we will see legislation enacted that will be different from state to state. And while DoorDash scrambles to deal with each state's legislation, who will be most hurt by all of this? Without question, the Dashers and drivers. Please leave your questions, comments, or concerns in the comments below. So that was a rant from Friday night. Sorry, I lost volume there for a second, guys. That I had while I was out doing a dash. Now, you know, again, guys, for all you listening, you're probably well aware, I'm sure I've made this clear many times. Started in rideshare in 2015 up till the pandemic. During the pandemic, started picking up some last mile courier work while everybody else was doing these food delivery platforms. I just wasn't really, I know that a lot of people made a lot of money. I found that out months in. By that point, it was going down a little because the initial money was really where it was at, those $100 cash tips, and people didn't know how to leave their houses. So, but that's when I started stepping into what I refer to often on the podcast as the off-brand apps, you know, the smaller apps, the catering apps, the last mile courier service apps, the ones that pay a lot better. They're fully transparent, show you exactly what the workload will be and what to expect, and show you all the details that you need to make an informed decision. So, it's super important. And I think that literally, like I said there, I think DoorDash is now somehow getting away with a W-2 model without you being a W-2. And yes, I do think that, no joke, I do think it is that for real. So if you're thinking like, come on, man, like, you know, I understand they've made it a lot trickier and they're doing things that other apps aren't. I'm not saying even that a lot of the giants, Uber, Grubhub, Instacart, Uber Eats, who am I leaving off the hit list here? obviously Lyft and DoorDash. I'm not saying that any one of them or that all of them are good and this one's so bad. They're all pretty close, but DoorDash takes it those extra 10 steps. I mean, literally, the multiple tiers and all those things I was referring to make it impossible for the others to earn. So therefore, in my opinion, they're not only doing oversaturation anymore. They understand that the oversaturation levels are to a point where you can literally get onto a dash, have a low AR, and we all know that, you know, other than a couple cities testing out some very, very bad programs like New York and Seattle that are just not working at all, we know that you can't dash now anymore. That is not a thing you need to, you need to schedule. And to schedule, like if I want to schedule a dash right now, I would have to go launch the DoorDash app, Look at today, there wouldn't be anything for my area. Look at tomorrow. But you can go, what, 7 days out or 6 days out? The seventh day appears at like 2 p.m. So it's not 2 p.m. here yet. And so, you know, I can schedule basically 6 days out. So maybe like next Monday, I could schedule a 2 hour window to Dash. And in that window, I might not even get one order. Most, I've never seen it like I did on Friday. And there were a couple other factors that I need to throw in there, because when I did start the Dash, I paused it. You know, you can pause for 35 minutes. And then I unpaused it and paused it again. So I started about 50 minutes late because I got about 20 minutes into the first pause, and then I unpaused, pause again. But that's an allowed feature. So I'm not even getting data. I'm not having offers sent to me. I'm on pause. So that shouldn't hurt it. I got on when I scheduled the time and I paused. I could be slamming them very hard right now if I hadn't done those pauses, because then I only did 80 minutes or 70 minutes of the 2 hour Dash window I had. But if I had done the whole 2 hour Dash window, because that I didn't get any orders, nothing. It's the first time it's ever happened. It was a Friday night. And as a lot of people always tell me, hey, weekends are for rookies or for people who rely on them and do them all the time and are top or diamond dashers. But I got to say, I saw a lot of dashers. I went over to, it was even showing a hotspot the entire time I was on. My block was from 6 to 8, and I dashed from 6:50 till 8. And I was on pause for the first part of it. So, I mean, like 7 to 8 in my market should be hopping on a Friday. But I was seeing dashers all over the parking lot, and I was not seeing many of them moving. Like, they weren't going in for orders, nothing. And, you know, I was doing a live stream. There were people in there saying, well, move your car, you know, take your car over there. And, or why aren't you going to a different spot or whatever? And I'm like, I am, you know, first of all, I was doing testing for Parapulse. So you guys, if you haven't checked out Parapulse, check out the Para app and check out Parapulse. It is very helpful. And we need more people to do it to get it to work, because it's like a crowdsourcing. But we'll talk about that another time. We've talked about it before. But basically, I was in the right spot in my vicinity. I was parked in an area where there are 15 to 20 restaurants within a mile and a half perimeter of where I was parked. And I was parked in a great spot I know to do well. So as far as DoorDash and food delivery goes, where I was is a great fishing hole, as we often refer to them. So I don't know, guys. The DoorDash model is really, luckily, I have never relied on DoorDash. We've had a lot of problems. I've had a lot of direct problems with them. I've had a lot of problems with their hidden tips and all the things that we've tried to combat over the years. I think that the work we've done at Para has been pretty amazing. As most of you know, you know, we had 2 cease and desists from DoorDash for running basically, you know, through the app, complete transparency. Now, yes, the TOS states that you can't do that. However, the independent contractor rule in this country, no matter which test you go under, says that independent contractors are allowed to use any tools at their disposal to get their job done properly the way they like to do it without any outside control from the hiring entity. All of the testing to see if you're an independent contractor say that in one way or another. So it says, you know, yes, they can't tell you how to do your work, and they can't tell you what tools to do it best. But they actually do that, because when we were doing it at Para, they were like, no, you can't be doing it. Well, here's what I feel like. You guys should be doing it. You have they have a team that is literally in place to make things not transparent. Like the code itself is written to be transparent. Like, think of it that way. Like, the way that they just write it cleanly and how it should be comes through as complete transparency. Here's where you start. Here's where you end. Here's the full pay. Here's the tip. Here's everything that people need to see to make informed decisions. They have a team in place that is constantly updating and hiding details. They have tier systems. They have, I mean, this is W-2 work, guys. This is W-2 work. And as always, please write me, email me at steve@rideshare-rodeo.com if you have anything you want to say about DoorDash. I would love to have an episode of just DoorDash comments. Okay. So like, email me in. I know a lot of you email me all the time and I love it, you know, and I do read them all. I know sometimes you guys write long ones, so I flag it and I go back to it, but I do get to them. But write me and put in the, in the title DoorDash, whatever you want to put in there. But make sure the word DoorDash is in there first and email me. And I'd love to have read, you know, I won't read anybody's names. I won't read anybody's email addresses or any of your information. I will just read them as, you know, maybe if, you know, maybe I'll just read from the market. Like this came from, you know, this came from Dallas, but it won't say if it's, you know, it won't say gender. It wouldn't say name, age, email, nothing like that, because there's no reason to put those details out there, even a first name or anything. So I'll just say what market it came from. So please write me on that if you're interested. And yeah, let's move into this story that's going on that we've been following in Minneapolis for a while. We have a 2-minute little audio play here, and then we'll discuss.
Toll is reviving an effort to require minimum wages for rideshare drivers. The plan would ensure that drivers get at least $1.40 per mile and 51 cents per minute while passengers are in the car, and no less than $5 a ride. Caroline Cummings brings us the latest.
Welcome to the regular meeting of the Business Housing Zoning Committee.
Dozens packed a Minneapolis City Council meeting Tuesday asking members to protect rideshare drivers by requiring a minimum wage.
Uber and Lyft see us as cheap labor. That should not be tolerated in the city of Minneapolis. All we're asking is for fair compensation.
Drivers shared stories about how they struggle to make ends meet and shared screenshots of their take-home pay, some walking away with less than half of the total cost for a ride.
They deserve more for everything they do to make it possible for me to live without a car. They deserve the basic human dignity of a livable wage.
The measure is similar to one approved last year by the city council, but was later vetoed by Mayor Jacob Frey. The state legislature also passed minimum pay rates last year, but Governor Tim Walz vetoed that too. Now Minneapolis is trying again. But rideshare companies Uber and Lyft are sending the same warnings. They say passing this local ordinance could mean ending operations not only in the city, but the whole state. A spokesman for Lyft in a statement said in part, quote, the council's proposed bill ignores economic reality. It pushes the same egregious mandates that were vetoed by the mayor last year, and it could make rides on Lyft too expensive for too many. Uber added, quote, the proposed rates mean much higher prices for riders and less work and pay for drivers.
Uber and Lyft are finessing us, and they're finding creative, strategic ways to take money out of our pockets.
In Minneapolis, Caroline Cummings, WCCO News.
The proposal advanced out of committee today. If approved by the full council, it would take effect in April. The Minneapolis Downtown Council and Hospitality Minnesota are also opposed to the ordinance.
All right, guys. So that's the news. That's where we're at. So we know Seattle's model's failing, the pay up legislation. You know, it's one thing when it's for rideshare, because how would rideshare not fall under the TLC, the Taxi and Limousine Commission for any state? Because if you're arguing, well, I'm an independent contractor. Well, I've worked for a limo company, and I know some aren't with cabs, but many are independent contractors. And with limos, almost every limo company I know in Denver, you are an independent contractor if you're a driver. They don't have employee drivers. So yeah, that's the TLC is actually in place to make sure that for that space, people are, you know, just that things are being done properly. And, you know, I would need to look at each state's TLC and say, yeah, I agree with that, or I don't like this, or I don't like that, but that's just me. But nonetheless, there is a mechanism already in place in every state regarding this stuff. So in reality, why wouldn't rideshare fall under that? So if you remember, Seattle brought rideshare in under just rideshare at first. But in January of this year, they brought in food delivery platforms. So it's like the backward effect of Prop 22. Prop 22 was created to help rideshare drivers, and it went into effect of January 1st of 2020, not knowing that 3 months later we would be locked down in a global pandemic and that food apps were going to become the new norm and the big ones. And that really killed it because the base pay on food apps is junk. So what happened in California? People working food apps can optimize Prop 22, but it's still a trash ruling. But if you really dive in, now some people might, there's the claim that the medical insurance portion on Prop 22 helps you. I would go as far as to say, I know a lot of people in California, some of them have optimized this. Some of them optimized it and then got rid of it, the stipend for healthcare, because they actually found the same insurance policy for less money. For a while, it was, you know, you're really only getting Obamacare at about the same price, but you're getting it with an Uber bow on it, you know, or whatever. But now I've had a couple people tell me in the marketplace they found cheaper insurance than they get with the stipend. So it's like, well, this is ridiculous. So it literally does nothing for rideshare drivers, and that's who it was created for. Well, in Seattle, they took it the other way. You know, they started with rideshare. I mean, to what degree was it working? I really don't know. You know, I didn't hear, there weren't a lot of articles, there weren't a lot of complaints. So I don't really even know how much pay changed. It just gave a little cushion to the drivers, but it fell under the same ruling that they have for all drivers. So to me, yeah, you're going to need to look at it because the gig space has never been defined. That's a problem. We talk about that often on this podcast. That's a problem right there, that the gig space, is not defined. But yeah, I don't know. As far as I know, there weren't a lot of complaining, and people weren't too upset about the rideshare portion. What they've done in Seattle now is the same thing they've done in New York City, which is they've passed the fees along to the customer. They've upped the customer fees. They've upped the restaurant prices again, beyond even their first raise of the fees. And then on top of that, the customer is now like all kind. They've got the line item for the pay up legislation. And so what has happened? Orders are way down. I mean, people are tightening their purse strings anyway, but orders are way down in Seattle. The drivers can get on anytime and dash now. So that's a problem because that allows the triple over quadruple oversaturation levels. Because if everybody can, I mean, it's weird because everybody should be able to get on when they want. But this is where I keep going back to the space is not defined. Define the damn space, because there are, you know, like I know some of the legislation we're going to be looking at soon has caps on it. To be honest, a lot of people might not agree with me, but I think there should be caps. I mean, why we're past the days of like, you know, Uber or Lyft has a car every three blocks just to be the closest to the passenger. So all of a sudden Uber's like, we need a car every block. We're past those days. We're to a new pay system and people kind of use who they use at this point. Very few people, I know a lot of people who use rideshare on a fairly consistent basis. A lot of people in the Denver metro area don't live downtown, but they do things on the weekends and whatnot, and they might be drinking or going out to have some fun, and they don't want to drive home. So they do take, a lot of people I know take Ubers into town on the weekends and whatnot, or Lyfts, and they become very familiar with the pricing, how quickly the cars can get to their neighborhood. Like there's some in Golden that people that tell me that Lyft can't get out there as quick, that it's much better to just use Uber. They've gotten to a point where for a while, I think that a lot of us had both apps and we would do comparisons like, ooh, Uber's surging. This is pretty high. Let me look at Lyft's price. A lot of the people I know personally, so my friends have deleted one app or the other. They don't have both on their phone anymore. They're not doing the comparison checking. They've just, now there's, it's been enough time. They know which one they like, and to each their own. I mean, I think I would be safe to say that most of my friends prefer Uber to Lyft, but I do have a few friends who are like, no, I don't ever use Uber. I only use Lyft. And again, these are people who don't work the gig apps. They just use these. So it's always another great take to listen to their take on things, because I do work them, so I understand them. And it's fun to, it's interesting to listen to people who just use it on the customer end of it. And especially when I get to explain certain things, like I love doing the comparison of like, how much, you know, if you don't mind me asking, how much did you pay to come out here tonight? Oh, it was this, and going home, I'll probably pay around this. They've got their numbers down. And then I love throwing at them, how much do you think the driver made? Because they're shocked to this day. Still, they're still shocked, which is kind of crazy to me, because I know a lot of passengers and drivers have started discussing this during rides. But okay, back to the Minneapolis situation now. So New York's not doing good with their legislation. Prop 22 doesn't do anything for rideshare drivers, really. Minneapolis not doing real well. And now, as you heard in what we were playing, what did they want? $1.50 per mile and 40 cents per minute or something like that. Something ridiculous. I mean, this is higher than all of the rest I've ever read. So this is pretty crazy. But so the rideshare company Lyft says it will be forced to stop operating in Minneapolis on April 1st if a minimum wage ordinance passes. The company sent emails to its drivers and users Monday urging them to sign a petition in opposition to the rideshare ordinance going through the Minneapolis City Council. According to the company, the ordinance would nearly double prices for rides in the city. More expensive rideshare prices could impact ride volume, meaning that drivers would end up earning less, even with higher pay rates, the email said. So I got to pause there and say, I agree with that, because we've actually seen that play out. We know that happens. So yes. And if they then try and bring in delivery after the fact, like a lot of these do, we know that happens. We know that people get tricked into believing that this is going to be, look, I'm all for defining the space, coming up with some kind of, you know, I'm more about portable benefits and other things like that. I think that when these cities that are really going hard for per minute per mile rates, I think that's wrong, because the price of life is increasing at such a rate. The price of jobs is not increasing at that rate. There's a thing out there, I don't know if many of you are familiar with, called, or I'm not sure, I've heard it referred to as a couple of things, but basically soft hirings, where companies are putting out, they need this, and that right now, so please send in your applications. But really, they might, like, maybe they've got five positions they're saying are open and please send in your resumes. But really, they only need to hire one person right now. They just want some resumes in file. So they're like these soft hirings. What I would call them is not soft hirings. I would call them fake positions or fake opportunities, because it makes it look in jobs reports, even if the job isn't filled, if they can say, well, look how many opportunities there are in your city. Well, from what I've heard, those opportunities are not all real. They're not all in existence. So, I mean, how much is it helpful if we're getting stats that don't represent what the reality is? And the W-2 world is having more than its share of problems too. I mean, you know, if you're very experienced or you have a specific niche or something, yes, of course, probably going to be the way you go. But the world is moving into a more dynamic app. It doesn't even have to be app-based. It could be a more traditional gig economy, but it's getting revamped and all this. But people are getting into more of multiple income streams and working for themselves. And I even think people who don't even think in that method of, okay, good, I've got multiple income streams now. I mean, they might word it different, but I think that people don't trust that something that the bottom might not fall out from them on anything at any given time. I really do. There is job security has become a joke. And I mean, I'm sure there's, you know, I'm sure there's a lot of you out there who are like, listen, I have a ton of job security and you could give me these amazing reasons and you'd be 100% right. What I'm saying is for the everyday person, it doesn't seem to be there so much as it used to. But last week, Minneapolis City Council committee advanced a proposal that would guarantee minimum pay for rideshare drivers, a revived effort after Mayor Jacob Frey voted a similar measure last summer. Under the plan, drivers would be paid $1.40 per mile and 51 cents per minute. So a dollar, you know, if you're on the highway doing 60, okay, because that means, you know, okay, so if you need to go 60 miles, you know, it's going to be $60 for 60 minutes doing 60 miles an hour. It's going to be $1.91 for every mile, because I can then I can add the minute and the mile together doing it at that rate. So it's going to be $1.91. So you're going to be paid, you know, you're going to be just shy of what, $120 per hour? I don't know. To me, that's, again, I think these numbers, to be honest, I hate agreeing with any gig company, but I can see what they're saying here. I mean, like that, they're saying like, this would raise, of course it would. How, if you have to pay the driver to take you, like, let's say that you live here in Denver, if you lived down in Castle Rock, you know, it's a 50 mile ride, or South Castle Rock, it's a 50 mile ride to the airport. So, I mean, let's call that 60. And now you're actually in my, what I'm talking about here. So like, that's going to cost a passenger $120 plus a tip if they want to. I mean, and the driver's going to look, I've got no problem with drivers making a lot more money, but I just think they're way overshooting here. And, you know, I mean, will Lyft leave? Who knows? But so also I forgot to add in there that also in this, what they're asking for is that drivers get 80% of all the fees for canceled requests for service, and that there has to be a minimum $5 ride. Those are the only two parts of this that I do agree with. And again, I want to see drivers paid as well as possible. I just think they're overdoing it. So the proposal mirrors language that Frey vetoed last summer, but without rules about when drivers are deactivated or kicked off the platform because of policy violations or criminal convictions, the new ordinance would take effect on April 1st if it receives the full council's approval. Dozens of drivers packed a meeting of business, housing, and zoning committee on Tuesday, telling council members how they struggle to make ends meet as gas prices and inflation have increased in recent years. Some shared screenshots of their take-home pay, showing they make less than half the cost of a ride billed to a customer. And for those of you out there who maybe haven't done rideshare in a while, or maybe to the random customer only who has found this podcast and might be listening, that's actually being nice, because I know markets where Uber keeps closer to 60% or 70% of the take. So them saying, you know, that it's that the companies are keeping more than half, yeah, that's pretty much the case all the time. So representatives for Uber and Lyft in statements to WCCO warned the companies would cease operations in Minneapolis if the ordinance passes, and it could threaten services in the entire state. Governor Tim Walz also vetoed a push by the state legislator for statewide pay minimums. Uber at the time said the legislation would increase costs to customer by 30%. So my point here is, you know, what are we doing? What is it? I mean, here's how I see it playing out. To me, this reminds me of when California was ready to pull out of, or when Uber and Lyft were ready to pull out of California because of AB5. And they were literally at the midnight hour of, hey, this is in effect, you got to pay it. And they're like, no, we'll leave. I mean, they were ready to shut things down. And I think we're there with Minneapolis, because if they don't pull the trigger, if the council doesn't pull the trigger, they're going to show the drivers now, because they told them last year, we need to do more research. All of that research has been done. All of that has been done. So if they don't pass it now, they're going to show the drivers they never meant it and it's never going to happen. Quit bothering us. Which is going to cause a whole different kind of headache for these drivers. Like, what have we been doing and why have we been listening to you and why have you been telling us that we can probably make this happen? But if it does pass, I got to say, I don't see how Lyft and Uber can afford to do this. I mean, they just can't. I mean, again, so if I'm a customer and I live in South Castle Rock and we use my example of the 60 miles, okay? So to get to an airport. If the driver's going to get paid $120, I have to figure out if I want to tip on top of that. That's not the only money I'm going to spend. You know, obviously it won't be 50% to the driver, 50% to Uber, and that cuts into their operating costs, and that'll be its own issue. But let's just even say that, so what? If it was 50-50, what? It's going to be a $240 ride to the airport for me, the customer? But now let's try and be somewhat in, you know, if Uber wanted to take a 30% on top or 35%, what? That would be, instead of 120, that would be closer to 200. And that is going to happen. I mean, 30% is what, like 25-30% is what InDrive takes, and they allow the drivers to make their own prices and let them be true independent contractors. So if you're going to charge if you're going to have that ride 60 miles be $200 to the customer, they're never going to do that. I mean, I'm sure there are some people who are going to do that, but they're going to expect a black SUV because here's the thing. I even know the current prices for black car service from the limo company I worked for in Denver. I could get a black car rented for an hour for cheaper than that, where I'm being driven in a BMW and given full black car service. That's cheaper for me to do than to take an Uber at these rates. So I don't see what this is. I am very skeptical of it passing. And if it does, I actually don't doubt that the rideshare companies would leave. Again, guys, do not misinterpret what I'm saying as I'm behind these companies. I don't think this is right. No, I'm with the drivers, but I'm trying to be realistic too. And I don't see how this works in any way, shape, or form. I just don't. I want things to get better. We did the town hall this summer and I did a follow-up with Stephanie and David just last week, you know, about what's going on here in Colorado. I'm trying to follow all of these and stay on top of them because they're all important. But the way some of these go, I'm like, what are you expecting to happen here? Like, I'm okay with 80% of a cancellation rate and a $5 minimum ride period for any given ride, even if you want to go two blocks, because part of that even is I don't think you should ever have no transaction should be less than $5. But also it stops people who just wanted to go 10 blocks and they don't feel like walking from making you drive to them and take them 10 blocks to earn $3 or $2.80 or something after Uber's cut. So I get that. $5 minimum ride makes Uber push that onto the customers. And I think that's okay. Because that maybe on that they're not taking 50-50 and they charge $8 or $9 to the customer and they say this is our minimum ride pay. And the driver always gonna get $5. That way the driver knows that. And the 80% of cancellations, you know, I'm not exactly sure how that would work. I would need to look at how much cost is incurred by the rideshare companies themselves, because if it's 20% with everything, the processing, all that, I agree. I don't think they should be making money on a canceled ride, but the driver should, because the driver's en route to them, all that. But they do need, Uber and Lyft would need to cover the costs. So I don't know if this city council number of 20% is correct. But even if you call it 20 or even 30% and say the driver is going to get 70 or 80, I agree with that too. But the $1.40 a mile and the 51 cents a minute, I don't think I agree with any of that. And I'm a little concerned here. I'm also a little concerned that the day that they would potentially leave the state is April Fool's Day. I think that's just, you know, not, I know it's a very serious subject, but I think that's just too comical, to be honest. Let's see what else we can get in here today. So we talked about DoorDash and Lyft and teaming up, but they used that word that threw me. The Lyft driver who's accused of picking up two teens, those teens were runaways, and he took them back to his apartment, and he sexually assaulted one. They somehow got out of there and made it to the hospital and all that was called. Well, that's, you know, that's on him. I don't know. It doesn't say if they requested an Uber teen ride. I'm guessing if they were runaways, maybe not. But it just shows that it's not strange now for people to, even like people passing by, to see an Uber or Lyft driver picking up, because one was 15, one was 14. It's not uncommon for now. It's because the apps allow unaccompanied minors. It's not uncommon for somebody to be driving around and see two minors get into a rideshare car. So to me, that, again, it doesn't necessarily even have to be a teen ride. It's just that, like, now people don't think it's strange. Before, people looked at it like, why is that kid getting in that Uber? And that's how I feel like people should look at it. I've said many times, I'm so opposed to Uber and Lyft teen rides. I think that was one of the only things that they never changed that I always loved about those companies. Them doing that is absolutely crazy. Okay. The shareholders of Maple Bear DBA Instacart lawsuit. So that the deadline to get in on that is March 25th. If you invested from them IPO to what was it, October 1st of last year, so September to October 1st of 2023, if you were investing money at that point and you had any losses incurred from your stocks that you had purchased, you can be part of this lawsuit because they misrepresented their growth. They misrepresented their earnings. So basically what they did was when they IPO'd, and I don't know how you do this, because I thought that part of IPOing was them dissecting every piece of your IPO and saying, okay, you're ready to go public. So I thought that somebody might have caught this, but whatever. Bottom line is they gave bogus information out to get people to invest when they went public. And it's just proof of, again, you know, just some of the scumbaggery that goes around with some of these companies. And you guys know I'm not a fan of Instacart. There's a whole story there that maybe we'll attack next week about how Instacart is doing a little better, but I don't want to give them any credit right now, because that why they might be doing a little better has to do with a whole situation of people crossing illegally into this country. And so that's a whole story of its own and a whole different rabbit hole to go down. Before I get out of here today, I want to say one last thing to you guys. We have been doing this, Mike Harubi and I, New Jobs America. We have been doing this 30 to 60 second video of please record one of yourself. You know, hi, my name is Steve. I live in the Denver market. And I want to remain an independent contractor, or I prefer to be an independent contractor because, and then just give a few points about why you in your market, again, just first name and city that you either live or work in, and make it into a video of just you talking on your phone, and then upload it to the Dropbox link that you will find in the show notes of this podcast. Because if you do that, the March 11th rule change goes into effect on March 11th. When is March 11th? A week in 6 days. So it's next Monday is the rule change. Now, what happens the first day? Probably nothing. It's probably going to take months for them to start determining how they're going to align with states and how this will help states put things into place. This is what we like. Again, this is a federal ruling. So we're waiting to see this federal ruling happen so that we can see how states align to it. Because it's almost like, you know, it's like federal minimum wage. Nobody's really making that. Even if a state, there's a couple states that still use the federal minimum wage in any kind of documents you'd find in the state, but you're going to get hired at a higher rate than that. That's just like, people don't really hire at that federal minimum wage. This is going to be a federal standard, but it's also going to get a push to the states, and the states will get perks by enacting it or forms of it. So it's going to be interesting after next Monday to really be watching who is aligning, what states are aligning with, even close to, even if it's not exact, who's aligning to these new federal laws. I'm very interested to see. But if you guys don't mind, if you do gig work at all, even if it's part-time, if you want to stay independent, and if it's part-time and you have a full-time gig and you're doing it one night a week or two nights a week, you absolutely need to think about this. A lot of times when we talk about things, the part-timers don't need to listen as much, because maybe they just go out for a few hours every week for a little extra spending cash. That's a different story. But this is now the time where even those people need to be concerned, unless they don't care about not being able to work these gigs anymore. Because some of the legislation coming out it's going to affect everybody on the platform, not only full-time drivers. So please, please make a video and upload it to the Dropbox link, which is in the description of whatever podcast player you're listening to this on. It doesn't matter. The link will be in there to all. It's just a Dropbox link. You don't have to log in. You just put your first name, you upload the video, and that's it. So with that said, you guys, that's a wrap for the week. Thank you for joining me. And we will be back here with the roundtable later this week. And next week, another episode of Rideshare Rodeo. Until then, be safe, earn smart, and be good to each other. I'm a mile away.